Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome tonight to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A. In the Studio B, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Fine, Mr. Allen. On this beautiful night here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, it looks like there could be some rain later on. But we've had, the last month or so has been fairly decent. Watching closely events all around the world, if you will. We want to send condolences to our friends in the journalistic world, if you will, after the violent and vicious death of James Foley, a well-known journalist, if you will, beheaded by ISIS yesterday somewhere in Iraq or Syria. The United States doesn't seem to have the intel on that, but we know some folks that knew James Foley. Great journalist, if you will, covered a lot of things, was imprisoned in Libya a couple years ago for 44 days by Gaddafi forces, if you will. And so put our condolences to his family in New Hampshire, if you will, and to his many colleagues in the journalistic and media world. Don, it's a violent situation out here, I tell you. This is you got the Ukraine, you got Ebola sweeping through Western Africa, if you will, and certainly we've got violence and divide in the across the United States. And right now we were checking on our monitors, a interesting attempt at provoking an incident. A single white female, young white female, blonde, marched into the midst of a group of African Americans, she carrying a sign saying, "Support Officer Wilson." That brought about a near confrontation. Of course, police rushed to her rescue and removed her from the scene and arrested an African-American who was attempting to take her sign away. I guess it's the issue of all of a sudden freedom of speech is okay if it's a white person supporting a white police officer who killed a 18-year-old black man. Funny world that we exist in. By the way, the rockets, bombs, and et cetera flying once again in the Middle East, our international desk keeping us abreast on that. If there's any break there, they will buzz me, if you will. We'll break in on that. But over 200 and some rockets fired today from Gaza, Don. That's a real escalation of
three
rockets, too. Rockets that have gone as far north as Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And the military wing of Hamas has indicated that commercial aircraft, foreign and otherwise, coming into Ben Gurion Airport are on notice that there will be an attempt to hit that airport with long-range rockets. So that's going to be interesting. And, you know, just less than a month ago, we saw real panic amongst Western air carriers, if you will. But right now, everyone keeping an eye on Ferguson, Missouri, if you will. Don, they had a heck of an incident last night. They had a police officer from a little town called St. Anne's, which is probably about 15 miles west of Ferguson, kind of southwest, big, heavy set, bob type looking white officer from St. Anne's, Missouri, points his AR-16 towards a group of demonstrators, curses them and talks about he'll kill you, I want to kill you kind of thing. He was relieved from his duties with the multi-jurisdictional task force, sent back to his little home department of St. Anne's, Missouri, if you will. A lot of talk about that. St. Louis County Police raid a Episcopalian church, St. Mark's, there just outside in one of the towns over from Ferguson, if you will, accusing the church of housing and allowing protesters to sleep You know, Don, I thought there was always a doctrine, particularly in Christian white countries, that churches constitute sanctuaries.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. You know, Sunday morning at noon.
Well,
what
it can't be. It can't be in northern St. Louis County, because St. Louis County police sure went in there and have been harassing. Now, St. Mark's is a good Episcopalian church, if you will, with a white minister, and merely doing what Scripture says, and that is to allow the endangered and et cetera to find shelter and sanctuary. That's the key word, isn't it, Mr. Alvin? Sanctuary, right?
Yeah, sanctuary. And Mr. Edwards,
yeah,
I'm looking
yeah,
here.
Yeah, okay.
I'm looking
here. What do you got on your end, Don? What do we got? What else are you picking up from Ferguson and Eric Holder's visit there?
Well, I'm looking at social media right now, and there's a page that says, I support Officer Wilson on Facebook, that have risen in the last week from 400 likes to 51,309 likes. And they are going after the looters, telling them to go home. You know, there needs to be an investigation into, you know, where these people are coming from and why they are doing what they're doing.
Well, let me cut in on that because that is going to be a topic I'm going to make sure. Sources in Missouri and in law enforcement tell me that many of those so-called militants and agitators and et cetera that those folks are talking about, those are paid informants, agent provocateurs, basically on the payroll of any number of police departments in the general area. So I would welcome an investigation once they identify who these agitators are. I'd welcome to see what happens as they're vetted, if you will, to see just who they really are. You know, we saw this a lot, Don, back in the 1960s during the upheaval of the country and the Black Revolution and et cetera. Boy, we found a lot of Negroes that were agent provocateurs being paid by the FBI and local jurisdictions. In fact, I'll tell you what, we mentioned it about 2.5 months ago on this program. A person connected with the Minneapolis Television Network had discussed with yours truly about rumors of organizations that had been infiltrated by the FBI, CIA, and et cetera. And he went out under the Freedom of Information Act, got some documentation. Don't you remember that program? In fact, we gave the address of one of the so-called militant facilities in St. Paul.
Yeah,
the actual address that turned out to be a cover for an FBI covert operation, COINTEL, and et cetera. So for the folks that are talking about, you know, that the thugs and the hoodlums need to be dealt with, I fully agree. I just want to make sure that we're told who they really are and who they're getting paid by. Ooh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Every revolution or upheaval has some type of plant from either the federal government or local government, and that's where a lot of our leaders were gunned down in cold blood, Mr. Edwards.
That's right, Mr. Allen, and you're talking to a man who lived during that period of time, was out there, was in the South, particularly was here. I can well remember when the so-called Cincinnati Black Panther chapter was revealed and uncovered as a FBI sting operation. FBI was taking young African-American military personnel, basically training them at the Army Depot in Oakland, California, and then disseminating them around the country. Brothers show up, you know. One thing they always did, they always, for some reason or another, wore one of those old Army fatigue jackets. You guys used to wear them out there at Fort Lewis.
They'd
always come up with the Army fatigue jacket. And, of course, back in those days, you know, the fro was in style, and they always had an out-of-sight fro, if you will, because that was supposed to be an indication they couldn't be military because, you know, you had to keep your hair basically short. But in country, in other words, in Vietnam, that wasn't true. When you were out there in the jungle and you were on deployment, you know, your hair could grow as long as you wanted it to grow if that's what you could handle, you know what I mean? So, hey, it's interesting to see some of the things that are saying, because that's what we're here for, to deal with the history, if you will. And I would certainly like to know who's paying these so-called agitators. I'd like to see who purchased their airline tickets and bus tickets. To get to St. Louis, Missouri, and I would
agree.
Just up the road to Ferguson. So we got a lot of things going. Grand jury, we're interested to hear some of the folks' observations and thoughts. Let's give that telephone number down on the grand jury was convened today. Yes. See if anybody's got any questions about the structure of the grand jury, what that means, what the grand jury is expected to do. County attorney there, St. Louis County attorney, saying it won't be until probably late October, maybe November, before the grand jury will complete its business. That's fascinating, isn't it?
That's very fascinating. You know, phone lines are open. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Let's get the caller.
You are live on the air. What's your name and what's your question?
I'm calling from Missouri. I heard you mention something about the grand jury just a moment ago.
Yes, sir.
You're calling from Missouri, sir? We see your number. Yes, sir. We're trying to get a fix. We know that the grand jury was convened or appointed by Circuit Court Judge there in St. Louis County. Well, sir, what can you tell me is going on and what is the real mood in Missouri? Because we can clearly see you are calling from strategic location in Missouri. Go ahead. What's your observation?
Right now, one of the state senators here is trying to get Robert McCullough removed. Apparently, he has a pretty bad reputation. I haven't been able to find any elected officials or any officials in the black community who support this man. I mean, he's been very supportive of police anytime there's been any incident between citizens and the police. And I just wanted to there's a senator, and her name is Jamila Nasheed out of St. Louis, and she's trying to get a petition going to get rid of this Robert McCullough. There's really kind of a conflict of interest here because Robert McCullough, the lead prosecutor there in St. Louis County, comes from a very police-oriented background. And also, one of the things that kind of concerns people, his father was a police officer who was killed by an African-American like almost 50 years ago.
1964, I understand. Yeah, 50 years right on the dot. Yeah,
yeah, and
okay.
Also, I believe his mother also works for the police department.
Let me tell you what we have up here in Minnesota, sir. We have his mother, we have an aunt, we have an uncle, we have his brother, and we have his wife. All are in law enforcement there in and around St. Louis County. Isn't this the same prosecutor who has refused to deal with, not counting the killing of a 22-year-old African-American yesterday in North St. Louis, another African-American since Mr. Brown was killed? Isn't this the same county attorney, Mr. McCullough? Isn't he the same one that has refused to deal with at least four killings of African-Americans by white police there in St. Louis County, including an African-American woman who was gunned down with a cell phone in her hand? That's the same old big McCullough, isn't it? Are we talking about the same man, right? Oh, yeah, the same man.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no confidence whatsoever in this gentleman. So,
could you help us out on this? And you're calling from that area down in there. I understand that he and the African-American county executive of Mr. Dooley, who has also been in office since, for 24 years, I understand that McCauley led a vicious campaign against the reelection of Mr. Dooley there in St. Louis County, and in the Democrat primary, Mr. Dooley lost, and I understand that that's the reason for a lot of tensions in St. Louis County, and et cetera. Is that correct and accurate, sir?
That's absolutely correct. And actually, he had accused, I believe, Charlie Dudley of being corrupt. But the corruption he was talking about were the political ads that he had against his opponent. I believe his opponent was like Steve Stangers or something like that. And So that was the corruption that he justified his not endorsing Charlie Dudley. No, actually.
And he and Mr. Dudley, sir, are both members of the Democratic Party there in yeah. Missouri, correct?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
And so in the past, my sources in Missouri tell me that Mr. Dudley had been a faithful and a loyalist, if you will, always supporting the ticket. And people were really stunned when the county attorney bolted, supported a white candidate in the primary against Mr. Dudley. And then, as you just indicated to us, sir, used some real inflammatory kinds of campaign materials, ads, and et cetera. And Mr. Dudley was defeated in the Democratic primary. Are we correct there?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
Right.
So
could you tell us a little bit about Officer Wilson, the greatest officer in the history of the Ferguson Police Department, according to Tommy Jackson, the little white chief? By the way, are there three African Americans, two females and a male, on the Ferguson Police Department? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and we just saw film of a officer. There's a little town called St. Anne's, Missouri, which is just kind of southwest of Ferguson there. Their police officer, one of their police officers, was a part of a multi-jurisdictional task force. He pointed a AR-16 assault rifle at a group of African-Americans last night.
Yeah.
At least they relieved him, told him he could no longer be a part of the task force. But he's still patrolling the streets tonight of St. Anne's, Missouri.
Yeah.
But tell us about what is it being said about Officer Wilson?
The interesting thing about Wilson is that he's not from that community. And I thought, I always thought that there's this thing that's been going on for years, this community policing, where you have people who lived in the community policing the community. But apparently, Wilson, from what I've heard, had to make a commute of about 20, 25 miles per day.
My understanding, Missouri. In fact, he is from a town called Crestwood, Missouri, which is in the southern part of St. Louis County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, Crestwood is way down there in the southern part of the county. In fact, we were monitoring how he would normally come to work. My associate, Mr. Allen, did some GPSing yesterday, and we had him basically jumping on Highway 270 and then spinning up 70 and then coming around through downtown and then swinging back west and coming up on is a town there called Normandy, and then turning north from Normandy and going about maybe 3 miles, 2 miles, and would be in Ferguson. So he lived way on the other side of the county, way on the other side of St. Louis, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, if you just basically take a map and any of those, like St. Charles, St. Peter's, Imperial, all those right around there are all about 20, 25 miles away, and all those are all white communities, basically. I doubt that any one of them has more than probably 2 or 3% of an African-American population in there, so... It's kind of interesting.
And this is a part of the segregation in St. Louis County where the county is actually divided almost in half from east to west, with whites in the southern part of St. Louis County and the African-American population either in St. Louis City, as they like to call it, or the northern suburbs. But all those police departments up there in the so-called northern part of the county, Lone Jack, places like that, those are Just like Ferguson, those are basically 95-98% white police departments, right?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of amazing to think about.
I don't
want to
cut you off, Missouri,
age.
But let me ask a couple other questions because we were just asking about the grand jury. Now, a circuit court judge, which is what your Missouri law is, circuit court judge appointed it, and I guess there in Missouri, state grand juries, it's 12. Is that correct? Am I close on that?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe that's
okay.
Correct.
And was the race of the and gender of the grand jury appointed yesterday. Has that been published in the St. Louis Dispatch or the Kansas City Star or your major newspapers there in Missouri?
No. Now, you're not going to probably hear too much about what's going on right now. So as far as the grand jury, they're going to keep very very quiet, I think. So.
Okay. People are saying that there's now some division that the people of Ferguson don't want the thugs and et cetera. We were just saying, sir, before you called in, that my sources in Missouri are telling me that many of the thugs are paid informants for white jurisdictions, white police departments down there. Now, is there anything to substantiate that as far as you know, sir?
Well, I mean, I think you actually asked a very good question about who's paying them to come here. You know, how are they getting here in the first place, and how are they getting paid, all these people that are coming in? I mean, I find that very interesting. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the thinking on Captain Ron Johnson? I kind of had him jotted down last week as kind of a hero. I still feel that about him. I think that old Tommy Jackson, the white chief down there, about 6 days ago, made a masterful move to try to undermine Captain Johnson's authority. Captain Johnson is also a member of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, right? Can you tell us anything about the little chief down there, little chief Tommy Jackson?
he's been claiming that there's no real problem down there, and he's having a hard time. The problem, according to him, is that he's having a hard time retaining black officers. That they're going to his department, and then they'll get paid better going to St. Louis or some other suburb or something like that. I mean,
like Hazelwood or something like that. Hazelwood's a pretty good sized town. Is that correct? North of Ferguson. Okay. I thought I saw the chief saying that, and I was kind of puzzled by that. Because I'm told by sources there connected even with the St. Louis City Police Department, Metropolitan Police Department, that they know of no situation which anybody came from Ferguson who was black into St. Louis. You know what I'm saying? Give me your sense, sir. You live in Missouri. Have you lived there all your life, sir?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. What is your feeling about what the grand jury is going to – I mean, is the grand jury going to indict?
I'm hoping they will, but this is Missouri, people don't know, is really kind of a conservative state. In Kansas City, St. Louis County, Jackson County, basically that's, the rest of the state is kind of a rural area, except for maybe Columbia, Jeff City. I think it would be
St. Joe's up there.
St. Joe.
I'm
hoping they will. I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope though, necessarily that'll happen. But we'll see what happens. Yeah.
One final question, and I don't know, maybe my colleague Mr. Allen has a question. How is there unanimity amongst the two big black political groups, the St. Louis and Kansas City? I know for years they always had a rivalry, if you will. Jet Banks, who was the party boss there in St. Louis for many years, African-American, he really ran things. And, of course, Leon Jordan, Bruce Watkins and them up in Kansas City. As the Kansas City, I don't know if you can speak to that because obviously you're out of the St. Louis area, but did the Kansas City political machine, have they been in St. Louis and in Ferguson? Have they been supportive of their counterparts?
Well, the Emmanuel Cleaver, I believe, has been there, and he's talked about it a lot. I know they held a protest march in Kansas City at one point. I think there's been some support, a little bit of support in Kansas City for it. But mainly it's been the elected officials, I think, in Kansas City.
Okay. One of the questions, and then if you have questions, Ms. Allen, certainly step in. Sir, give me, because obviously I'm kind of being racist almost, but obviously you are an African-American. What is the feeling there about Governor Jay Nixon?
I think a lot of black people support Jay Nixon because he's a Democrat, and he's he's the only choice in a sense they have. Jay Nixon was kind of slow. I think that's been the media has sort of picked up on that. He was kind of slow to react to this whole thing. He's kind of trying to set the right tone, but he does have the ability, for instance, to get rid of Robert McCullough, and he says he's not going to do that, at least not right now. So I think there's kind of a wait-and-see attitude with him. But I don't think he has any, like, great support necessarily in the black community right now. So.
Okay, and that's Governor Jay Nixon, Democrat, Missouri. Was fought quite a battle on behalf of segregation, I understand, back in 1992.
Yeah.
Is that the same Jay Nixon we're talking about and that you African-American folks in Missouri remember?
Yes.
Okay,
one.
And the issue of school desegregation, et cetera.
He, 1992,
he was being referred to as a segregationist of the first cut. Panthers can change. Brother Allen, do you have any questions for my caller from Missouri? You taking time, sir. Any questions, Don?
I'd just like to let both of you know, an hour ago, St. Louis Post-Dispatch posted a story by Kim Bell, and she says, and I quote, here, grand jury meets on Wednesdays for 4 months. The current one is set to expire September 10th, but will be extended to hear all the evidence in the Brown case, McCulloch said. That's a quote from McCulloch. He said the grand jury had 3 black members out of a 12 total.
Okay.
I share that with you.
Oh, boy. That's a better percentage than the police department.
Yeah.
3 out of 12, that's excellent. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Bell should have indicated, and I'll ask my caller from Missouri to confirm, because I've already done some research in preparation for tonight's program on the Constitution of Missouri. 9 members of the 12-member grand jury must vote to indict. Is that in the article, Mr. Allen?
I am
caller out of Missouri. Would you confirm that?
I am perusing the article right now, and it does not have that information in there.
All right, on the Justice Department's website, that there is a confirmation of that, and I think that there is somewhere in the St. Louis Dispatch. And I think maybe the what is the paper there? The Kansas City Star in Kansas City, Missouri, is confirming that there has to be 9 affirmative votes, one way or the other. It has to be 9 votes to get an indictment, and so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, but also McCulloch, if he thinks that charges are appropriate, he could file a complaint himself. That it would trigger a preliminary hearing, and the judge would have to hear the evidence and decide if it was sufficient enough to merit a trial. So
court, I do believe.
Yes.
That has to happen in open court as opposed to the grand jury, which is totally and absolutely secret. Okay. Missouri, you have anything else for us? If not, if you're still with us, we appreciate you taking the time to call because we in black America certainly need to be educated.
Okay, and we have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
All right. Let's get the call in. And again, thanks for Missouri.
Live.
Okay.
Yep, you're live on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
Hello. Fine. How are you? Who are we speaking with?
Good. My name is Julie. I'm in North Carolina.
Okay.
What can we do for you, Julie, and what's your question?
Oh, I don't actually have a question. I just have a comment.
Go right ahead, Julie.
Well, I am actually, I'm white, and I actually grew up in a very rural area, and I am not prejudiced at all, but...
Mm-hmm.
I am I'm in North Carolina, yes.
You grew up in rural North Carolina.
I actually grew up in rural upstate New York.
Oh, my God, I went to school in upstate New York.
Whereabouts?
Syracuse.
Syracuse,
yeah.
Where
were you
up? From...
You were on that area, or Rochester, or back towards Buffalo, or where?
I lived in Rochester most of my adult life. I actually grew up when I was younger up in, near Plattsburgh, so.
I know the area well. Okay,
yeah.
Well, we have some relationship there. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
University of Minnesota, University of Syracuse is my alma
yep.
mater. But go right ahead,
excellent.
Your observation.
Okay, well, my feeling with this whole Obama and Holder always getting involved whenever there's any kind of an uproar in the black community, I find that disgusting. No other president in the United States has ever gotten involved in that, and I really am starting to feel like they are racist. It's not the whites. I'm seeing so much more racism against whites than I see against blacks, and we all know what the crime rate is like, and we all know what's going on in Chicago, and they never, ever talk about that stuff. But the second...
Oh, that's not quite true. The president and his wife have both talked about Chicago. Holder's talked about Chicago. Yeah.
Are
they
going there to
Chicago.
Try to resolve those issues? Are they personally going on TV and saying, this is a crisis, we need to go there and take care of this?
About Chicago?
We are going in Chicago.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
are going
to
make
say,
sure
he
that
did,
justice...
The president did. He when the shootings took place in the summer of 2013... not only did the president talk about it, but his wife went there, met with families of victims and et cetera. That's where his program, My Brother's Keeper, was initiated, and millions of dollars are being poured in to try to salvage and save young African-American males and African-American people. But, you know, I can appreciate your observation. You feel that the president and the attorney general are racist. That's one of the beauties of America, as that the First Amendment allows us to express our opinions. Just think about it. We could all be in Iraq right now with our heads getting ready to be cut off. you know
well,
what I'm
and, the, and the other comment, that was just one of my comments. The other comment
and the
is...
Other comment?
The other comment is, you know, if the president does feel he needs to get involved and he gets on
mm-hmm.
TV and talks about these types of things that are going on, he should... try to dissuade the violence, and they should try to explain that we all live in America and that we all follow the laws and that people
uh-huh.
are innocent until proven guilty, and we do not automatically assume guilt of an officer of the law that has been trying to protect this community and obviously has no prior background of having ever abused his power, you know.
I mean,
and
do
just
we really,
the
do we
criminalization
really know that? Have
of
you
this,
had a chance to see his personnel record? Do we really know that? Do we know that Officer Wilson is just a clean-cut guy?
Well, we certainly don't know that the person that was shot was. As a matter of fact, I've got, you know, I've seen evidence on the contrary of the gentleman that lost his life. And
you're talking about Mr. Brown.
You know,
now, by the way, let me ask
yeah.
you a question because we expect this from those who are on the opposite side of the aisle. Now, does American law allow for a person to be executed for the commission of a misdemeanor?
Absolutely not. But again, the facts aren't in. There has been no court yet.
Oh, the autopsy.
And my
what I've
observed of the situation is that he was lunging towards the officer.
Was Mr. Brown was he armed? Do you know if he was armed or not? Other than with the so-called cigar.
Right. I think
did
you know, and everybody knows that he wasn't armed. And the question is, was he grabbing for his rifle? Was he lunging at the officer?
Handgun. The officer shot him with a Glock. 9mm. He didn't have any rifle. Where'd you get the rifle from?
Yeah, okay. Well, we're talking semantics now, but the point
is... No, it's not semantics.
It's
the kind of thing it's the kind of detail and specificity that is important if you're going to talk in terms of defending a situation. So he
right,
had a,
so you're saying that any time...
He had a Glock 9mm handgun. Okay.
You're saying that
Mr. Brown
one,
was reaching for the officer's gun?
Yeah, that's
he,
what the stories
the
are.
Weapon?
What's that now?
You're saying that your statement was he was reaching. Initially, you said reaching for the rifle, but you meant reaching for the handgun.
That's
so
correct.
So, Mr. Brown was within a foot or 2 feet of Officer Wilson when Officer Wilson shot him.
Yeah, honestly, sir, I don't want to get into specifics because I wasn't there, and neither were you. So that's why we have laws.
But I'm going
that's
by,
why we
I'm
have laws in our country
going, see, that
will work
that doesn't
through
work.
All
that.
That
doesn't work in North Carolina. I'm going by the reports of three pathologists. Let me answer this. He was within 2 feet of him. How did he make that those two headshots? You're a farm girl from up in the upstate New York. You're living in rural North Carolina. How did he do those two headshots?
Yeah, I wasn't there, so I can't.
That Mr. Brown
I can't answer that question.
Actually have his head
I can't
on
answer that my
officer's
question
chest
and that
when he shot him in the top of the head.
Yeah,
well,
I can't
appreciate
answer
your
those
call,
questions.
North Carolina. But, you know, the most important thing is here is that we have justice, and then maybe in the process
that's
we can deal
exactly
with,
my point.
Criminality.
So let's not be violent people. Let's all be civilized
be
human
violent.
Beings and let our justice system work for our country as it's meant to be.
But justice,
thank you.
Now, when you say our country, are you talking about all Americans
sure,
or just some?
She is gone. We have another caller. Caller,
okay.
You are live.
Bye bye, North
air.
Carolina.
Yeah.
Call, call in.
Hello?
Yes, hello. You're live on the air. Who's calling?
Oh, yes. This is Mr. M. I've been listening to your
story.
Hey,
Brother M., how you doing, man? You just
doing
been able to get
good.
Him. We've had him coming out of Missouri and North Carolina. Go ahead. What's your observation?
I heard that. It was very, very interesting. You know, I mean, the debate is very good. You know, the thing is, but. You know, as I watch this thing, one thing really stands out in that, you know, they have a thing with officers and with the law and something that's called excessive force. And an individual that shot 6 times for allegedly, and I mean, we've seen some pictures, but I haven't heard the man that was in the store, the guy in the store, a store man that was there, that was face-to-face with whoever it was that took the cigars from his store. I haven't heard from him to make sure that they've, you know, that the man that they saw that was shot had the exact same clothes on, and this was exactly the man that was there. And even if it was being executed, I mean, and then the story goes, it keeps getting spun. And so we really don't know exactly what's happening because even when the officer came on, I happened to watch that live, when the chief came on to give the speech to say the name of the officer, and he was reading a script, and all of a sudden
yes,
the script said he got deviated, and it said all of a sudden, oh, and by the way, there was a robbery, and this man is a and he was getting ready to say suspect, and he couldn't say it. He apparently hadn't read the script ahead of time.
Right.
And he knew
which
he
was probably written for him by the county attorney. See, let me say this, M, and get your observation on this, and my associate, Mr. Allen, and any future callers, because we're going till 10 o'clock Central Standard Daylight Time. Two things. Think about this, and I want like to get your observation. Number one, where are the cigars? Okay? Where are the cigars? All right? And number two, I saw a copy on CNN of what was supposedly a transcript of the second interview that Officer Wilson gave to the St. Louis County, not the FBI, but the St. Louis County Police about 10 days ago. And he said he changed his story because I'm like you. I watched the chief on all the occasions that he did his live press interviews. And initially the chief said, the reason for the contact was that the two African-Americans were walking in the middle of the street, okay? Now, just 5 days ago, the Ferguson Police Department leaked a portion of the so-called statement by Officer Wilson, his second statement in which he said, as he drove by and told the African-Americans to get up on the sidewalk, he was listening on his radio to the dispatcher, and the dispatcher was indicating a strong-arm robbery at the convenience store, and he happened to just look into the rearview mirror, and he saw that the larger of the two African-Americans had cigars in his hand. Now, that is a part of the transcript that was leaked by Tommy Jackson and the county attorney in St. Louis County as a part of poisoning the well. Now, my question is, did anybody pick up the cigars?
Well, you know, that this nobody asked those basic questions. You know, it's continuing to be spinning yarns. Again, there was a store proprietor that apparently was confronted by the individual that came in the store. Well, let's hear from him.
Absolutely.
Who is that individual? Nobody said anything. Did he press charges on anyone that robbed him?
Let me tell you, somebody that he should have initially pressed charges on was Dorian Johnson, the young African American who I thought did an excellent job on day 3, 4, and 5 of talking what happened to his friend Big Mike. I agree with you, sir. I agree with you, Em, that if it was really what they say that it was, then the store owner, no, he's not the owner, actually, he's merely managing what is a franchise, he should have demanded that the Ferguson or St. Louis County police should have arrested Mr. Johnson, don't you think so? Because he was, what, an accessory before and after, right?
Of course. And then, if in fact there was such a crime perpetrated, does that type of crime warrant that type of police response? I mean, come on. People go into stores, put something in their pocket, whatever. Of course I don't condone that kind of thing. That's not what
none of us do. Myself, my colleague, you. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Of course you're not supposed to do anything like that. But does that warrant that type of a response where you're going to have an APB out about somebody that stole some cigars?
Absolutely.
You're going to put all-point bulletin out to police cars and look for this man that has stole these cigars. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It's ludicrous.
No, it does not. It does not. By the way, the amount of the cigars in hand does not constitute a felony in the state of Missouri. That's the reason I asked the young lady who said she was calling us from North Carolina, which I think Mr. Allen, my associate, has confirmed, saying that she previously lived up in Platteville, New York, which I know that area very well. You know, I'm just trying to understand at what point the actions of Mr. Brown, particularly based on the second interview done by Officer Wilson. Of course, you heard her attempt to chide me by saying that I did not know what had happened. She has no idea who we may be, you understand? But it's clear we know more than she does, okay? Because
Mr. Aaron,
she was referring to a rifle. That sounded like some Billy Bob kind of stuff. Sounded like some things being said by the Sons of America, the local Ku Klux Klan groups there in the state of North Carolina. But,
Mr. Aaron, I have to ask you
the question. Where are the cigars? Have they been inventoried? Are they in the property room? The FBI and the Department of Justice been made aware of the – and I think that yours is an extremely valid point. Where is the storekeeper?
Right. And then once you get to a point of bringing in, you know, the National Guard, now you're bringing in Eric Holder, and they're actually calling for the President of the United States to make an appearance there behind this situation.
Sir.
Behind a cigar, apparently a cigar robbery. I mean, when we have people getting their heads cut off across the country, we have this president, I'm going to tell you, he has got to be just counting the days until this presidency is over, because he has encountered firestorm after firestorm. And now these situations, the way they're escalating, it's almost like when you're trying to perpetrate or do something against someone, you know, the criminals use a strategy of, let's set a fire over here so that we can rob the bank over here.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
There you go.
That I'm concerned that I'm seeing with all these distractions, you know, what does he do, you know? And so...
Well, let me say this, take the opportunity with a caller, because then Mr. Allen is there in the other studio. Mr. Allen, in doing some research, and we have colleagues and associates in England, and our cousins, if you will, our you know, English cousins. BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, which is actually larger than CBS, NBC,
and who you will get a different slant on. You will get a different slant on, yes.
Let me tell you what they said, is that Officer Wilson, who, by the way, was divorced just last year, so he may have had some stress. Everybody keeps talking about his you know, mindset. But his mother, Officer Wilson's mother, is a convicted felon. She was involved in a credit card fraud. Are we on point there, Mr. Allen?
Yes. Mother of policemen who shot dead Michael Brown was a serial con artist who defrauded thousands of dollars from neighborhoods and stolen credit card scheme. That is currently
London newspapers, M. Yes. That's the London newspapers and
the
BBC.
DailyMail.com, UK.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny that they have to come all the way across the water, and they can get information that those right in that town don't share with us. Very interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very
and Mr. Allen and this program has had that information for, what, 5 days, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, and she didn't serve any time. She lives in a $180,000 house, and people are questioning, man, how did you get on a cop salary? How do you afford that? And so... yeah, there's a lot of critical she's a target, I'll put it like that. But, you know, I need to address something real quick here. I'm getting a lot of chats in the chat room saying that Mr. Brown used his body as a weapon and it was fueled by PCP, inhaled from one of the cigars he stole. First of all, if you steal cigars from the store, they don't come with PCP in them. Secondly, black people don't really do PCP, okay? And so
thirdly, Mr. Brown would have had to have saturated the stogies within a period of about 12 to 13 minutes because it was exactly 14 minutes from the time that the call was made from the store to the time that Officer Wilson encountered Mr. Brown and Mr. Johnson. So, oh, by the way, the toxicity tests are back. They don't show that kind of concentration in Mr. Brown's system, if I'm not mistaken.
No,
I would refer us to
right.
The St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Chicago Tribune, Kansas City Star, Des Moines Register, and et cetera. So he uses his body
right.
as a weapon, huh? Wow.
Yeah, you're absolutely
let
right.
Let me ask this question, Em. You're still with us. Give
yeah.
us your observation as a learned African-American human being. The description of how the six shots got into Mr. Brown's body. I mean, is that something that can fly? I mean, I know it'll fly in front of a grand jury, but, I mean, how do you feel about it just from a personal perspective?
Well, just from what I've heard, you know, there's conflicting reports. I mean, now that we have a nationally recognized pathologist that has, you know, given a statement that says all of these shots were fired to the front of the man. So that refutes
mm-hmm.
all of supposed reports that said he was running, that he was shot, that he was running away from the man. And it looked like it was a point-blank execution. When you look at the
mm-hmm.
results of that, you know, but to take that point just a little bit further, another point, we have a mentality of the police, and not just in that city, because this is a national type of a response type of a thing that you see for African Americans. If there's anything that happens in the community, and especially if it involves an officer, which I have the ultimate respect for officers, that's a job I would never do. It's a very difficult, thankless job.
Uh-huh.
But if something happens, they let you know you better stay in the house because it's going to be an all-out assault on you. It's a retaliatory type of a response to a crime. When they're supposed to respond to that individual crime, they're not supposed to take it out on everybody else. They're not supposed to come
absolutely
with
correct.
A gang type of a mentality. And this is the kind of thing that we're facing in this country now with the officers continue. If something happens, well, all of a sudden – they're going to beat everybody that they see
that may look
like that person on a
that's
vague
right.
description. And that's,
by the way, the 22-year-old African-American killed in North St. Louis yesterday afternoon by two white St.
Yeah.
Louis City police officers
yeah.
was shot 10 times. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I guess
yeah.
one of the advantages of having these automatic
yeah.
Handguns, I mean, you can just squeeze the trigger and, you yeah. know, most of those guns carry a
sure.
magazine with 15 bullets, right, Mr. Allen, and one in the chamber.
Yes.
So you could possibly pump 16 right quick into a person and load up and maybe pump another 16. I don't know. It's
well,
obvious that we're being used as target practice in America.
And the tanks, the assault rifles, the things that they get that they use on supposed enemies that are brought to our cities, that are given
Let
to our
Let me ask
cities.
You a question on that. Why wasn't that equipment used? And I'm aware that both the Nevada state police, the Reno State, the Reno Police Department, and the Las Vegas Police Department have that same kind of equipment. I'm asking this question for my good friends up in Idaho that periodically send us messages, if you will, up there around Priest Lake and et cetera. Why, when Bundy stood out in front of his ranch and pointed and had a group of at least, I don't know, 12 or 14 mercenaries, why didn't the government, why didn't the local police departments and the Nevada Highway Patrol send in their armored vehicles and et cetera? You remember the Bundy situation, Mr. Bundy? Big ranch owner, big Republican.
Yeah, I do.
Big buddy of Rush Limbaugh had his boys standing out there with their automatic weapons and et cetera, and told federal agents now, federal agents,
and stood
that
them down.
They shall not pass, and they didn't. They just got in their cars, drove on back. The U.S. attorney has not indicted, if you will. There's been no FBI strike force and et cetera. Why didn't they use a situation like that? Because now you want to talk in terms of civil disobedience. Boy, that's what Bundy did out there in Nevada. Oh, by the way, gentlemen, on that note, Ted Nugent was in town last week. A lot of y'all didn't know it.
No.
He was at the Medina ballroom there in Medina, Minnesota, which is a small town about 40 miles west of us. He called Barack Obama every NIG in the book and said that he was nothing but a pile of manure, though he used the other word that starts with S.
And he's been doing
and he was backing his gun, gentlemen.
For some time.
He had his gun on his hip as he was at the Medina ballroom. He clowned out there. He clowned.
He's been doing this for some time, and he's been getting away with this. You know, everywhere,
yes,
he should be under the radar wherever he goes so that they can silence him. But no. I would imagine he had an escort to Medina.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. In fact, we had some Minneapolis police officers that were out there with drink in one hand and talking in terms of, you know,
yep,
what they're going to do to the niggers on the other. So, Ted Nugent in town. Em, we appreciate it. I think we got some other calls
right,
waiting.
You
appreciate
soon.
You calling in, sir.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Allen, what do we got? We apologize, but, you know, we're talking about Ferguson, Missouri tonight. And
yes, we
we're
are.
Talking about the quest for justice and the controversy about, I think North Carolina expressed it, what is the feeling of many Caucasians, that didn't make any difference what the level of crime was, is that Michael Brown just desired, he just should have died, should have just been
yeah.
shot down in the street, left uncovered for over 3 hours. Like somebody said, in America, you know, you shoot your favorite dog gets hit, you go out and put something over him, don't you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Michael Brown laid in that street uncovered for over 3 hours. But give that number out, Mr. Allen, in case we've got any more calls coming out of Missouri
sure.
or anyplace else. This is
again,
the Don and Ron Show, buddy.
Yes. Again, the phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we invite you to call in. We're talking about Ferguson, Missouri, the shooting, the murder of Michael Brown. And all the PCP he was allegedly on, chasing, running after the cops. Ms. Edwards, a note on that. I've been listening to some talk radio shows locally and nationally and reading a lot of articles online. And, you know, I know that a man was fatally shot by police in Salt Lake City, South Salt Lake, a white man. And I perused the story real finely, given it a critical read, and I didn't see anywhere in there where it said that he was on PCP or he did anything of the sort and charged the cop, but, you know, he was shot dead. But we have some news coming in the back.
Wow. Go ahead, Mr. Allen, what we got?
So, no, I was just talking about the police identified the man in South Salt Lake. He was shot at a 7-Eleven acting erratically, but, you know, they didn't say he was on any PCP or anything. But
okay, now this was in Salt Lake City, you said?
Yes, yeah, South Salt Lake. Police officer.
Yeah, South Salt Lake City. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did this just happen today, or was he a Mexican, or?
No, he was a Caucasian male. And
okay.
Yes, and this is coming through. Well, one of our people in the chat room asked us, did we hear about that? And I just want to let them know that, yes, We did hear about that, and
why certainly. We heard about the handicapped young African American shot and gunned down in Los Angeles 6 days ago. We heard about that. In fact, by the way, for our friends in the chat room, the highway officer, California highway officer, who beat a black woman unconscious in the middle of the freeway, saying he was trying to protect her from herself, apparently has finally been relieved of command. Horrifying pictures. She's been hospitalized now for 2 weeks. He just beat her head he punched her like he was punching a common man, if you will. But to the question, yes, we know. We know about the young black man shot in the Walmarts in Lima, Ohio, in Lima, Ohio. But, boy, we don't have to go far for that, Mr. Allen. I mean, we had our own situation here about a year ago, young African-American. Had us, the whole side of his head blown away. Police shot him, shot him 8, 12, 14 times with machine guns in a closed space in the basement while the police dog was tearing his testicles off. I mean, come on. You know. By the way, let me also say this, Mr. Allen, for the chat room and et cetera. A lot of folks here don't realize that in modern times that we the black community, have been under martial law. I'm surprised that no one has talked about that. 1966, National Guard called in after 3 days of disturbances. North Minneapolis put under martial law. Negroes ordered to stay in their homes, if you will. Gunfire was exchanged between National Guardsmen and marauders, as they call them. But, yes, we understand martial law, okay? By the way, Mr. Malvin, just like we understand what happens in a grand jury.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, but go ahead. Get that number out again. Phone lines are open. We're talking about Ferguson, Missouri.
And number
the loss of the life of a young man. And we're talking about North St. Louis, where I just was reviewing, as Mr. Allen was talking, on my video, on my screen, Deputy Police Chief St. Louis talking in terms of the circumstances that led to the death of a 22-year-old African-American there yesterday afternoon, okay? You know. By the way, research by the Malcolm X Institute indicates that a young African-American, male or female, is killed one every 28 hours by white police in this country. So, you know, we understand the bloodbaths and et cetera in Chicago. Let me say something about that, too, you know, in case North Carolina's got some friends. One of the things that troubles a lot of folks are how many cold cases there are when you have these situations of young African-Americans being found. See, here's the thing with me, Don, and I've served as a federal monitor, if you will. One of the things that always troubles me is that so many of these young men are headshot victims. You know what I mean? Shot right in the head. And by the way, we have an interesting pattern in St. Louis County, and that is that over the last couple of years, there's been this pattern of young African-Americans who all were shot through the top of the head.
Huh.
Kind of wonder maybe if Officer Wilson maybe isn't one of these serial killers there in St. Louis County. Uh-oh, we threw it out there. Maybe one of Officer Wilson's buddies or friends can give us a call. Give that number out again, Don. We're opening it up, baby.
Yes. Yeah, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show, and we are talking about Ferguson, Missouri. Mr. Edwards, I was reviewing some of the video of the alleged convenience store's robbery.
Yes, sir.
And it's very interesting that the store owner has not said, or manager, whoever he is, has not said anything. But there's come the question of the timestamp in the upper left-hand corner. Because, you know, in the beginning when this was released, a lot of the local mainstream, or local national mainstream media news outlets were covering that up top and bottom. So you couldn't see what the timestamp was. And I'm looking at it right now again, and I'm actually going to enlarge it over here in the studio because it says 2014, and I can't make out on this one if it's a 6, which would mean it would be June, and then a 9 or an 8. I know it's camera 6, but there's been a few reports online and in local media that, you know, this whole video thing might be in question. So we have to
in support of what my colleague Mr. Allen is saying with respect to these time identifications on these videos. Mr. Alvin and I were discussing this in a production meeting. We were conference call with some other associates around the country who also had picked this up from a professor at the University of Syracuse. The time clock should have said 8/9/14, right? Is that
yes.
I mean, because he was killed on the ninth day of August, correct? So it should have said 8/9/14, right?
Yes.
What Mr. Allen has been picking up on is that folks are saying that slot on the video is not absolutely and unquestionably clear. And so I'm like Mr. Allen, I'm trying to find out if that's the real if that's the real video. I'm like M, the caller M that called in about 20 some minutes ago. I'm just wondering, isn't it they, you know, wanted to come forward with friends like Josie. By the way, the white woman, this was a real game they played on the radio station there in St. Louis. The white woman who called said that she was Officer Wilson's friend. The name Josie, you know where she got that name from?
Where?
She got it from the movie We Want to Be Cops, the comedy that's playing in major theaters across the country.
Okay.
She took the name Josie from one of the characters in that movie.
Okay, and that's hilarious. Hey, and this is another thing, Mr. Edwards, that I'm looking at just kind of tossing around in my mind because I am a little bit of conspiracy theories, but Michael Brown has the robber. It isn't plausible or possible in this case because the police claim that Michael Brown left the liquor store before 11:52. The security footage supposedly says 11:53:51. So in the real world, even if this was Michael Brown, it was 11:54 or later a.m. Okay, shooting location 2900 Canfield Drive, St. Louis, Missouri. Eyewitness reported his death at 12:03. Police claim encounter began at 12:01 p.m. This seems implausible because through the identification with them tweeted about it, assuming 1 minute for the event to the tweet and 3 minutes to encounter, 11:59 seems more likely for the time of contact to begin. Okay, now the trip from the liquor store, 9101 West Florissant Avenue in St. Louis to 2900 Canfield Drive, St. Louis, Missouri, 2/3 of a mile. Michael Brown would have been at the store. We needed to cover this in 4 to 7 minutes. If it was in 7 minutes, that's 60 miles per hour nonstop at the edge between a jog or a run. If it was four, he'd be going 10 miles per hour. So if he was fleeing, what I'm trying to say, Mr. Edwards, even if you look at it in a time stamp based on the media coverage and what's come out of the police department's official mouth, that this it didn't happen. He wasn't the guy at the liquor store. So,
well, here's the thing, Mr. Allen. I'll take on the position of the right, if you will. Let's say that he did get there. He's a big guy, 6'4". We haven't even talked in terms of his physique. 6'4", 289 to 290 pounds. Let's say he jogged. He jogged. Okay. Though that's not what Officer Wilson and Chief Tom Jackson said. Officer Wilson hasn't really said anything because no one has had access to his statements other than the information that has been strategically leaked by the St. Louis County Prosecutor, the St. Louis County Police, and members of the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. But it just doesn't make sense, that the timeline, if you will. But let's say that he does. Let's say that everything happened and that Officer Wilson, who was coming from, and I'm not going to say what he's coming from. I'm going to see how well people were listening. So if somebody's wants to call and tell us where Officer Wilson was coming from, then they've been listening for the last 11 days. If not, well, then we will confirm where he said he was coming from. But blew my mind, Mr. Allen. And again, the phone lines are wide open. When the second so-called interview with the St. Louis County prosecutor and St. Louis County police investigators, homicide investigators, was M, the caller identified as M, was right on point when he talked in terms that when Chief Tom Jackson, the white chief of the Ferguson Police Department, was reading from a prepared document, and he lost, I don't know if he lost his place, he slipped up or whatever, and he made a statement relevant to the knowledge or the lack of knowledge of Officer Wilson that Mr. Brown and Mr. Johnson, because technically they're co-conspirators, right, because there was a strong-arm robbery, right?
Yes.
That when he slipped up and said what he said, that the on one hand the officer didn't know, then all of a sudden the officer did, and then three days later, for those that are, you know, like their computer toys and et cetera, go back, take a look, CNN, MBC, Al Jazeera, were some of the networks that were given what was supposed to be a portion of Officer Wilson's second statement, where he was driving away. The call came over the radio that there had been an armed robbery. Initially, they said even an armed robbery, not a strong arm, but an armed robbery. He looked in the rearview mirror, and he saw that Mr. Brown, who was behind him as he was driving down the street, had cigars in his hand. Okay? Now, I repeat what we said before. We would assume that even with us saying it, that we probably have alerted them that, damn, we better find some cigars, okay?
Yeah.
Okay? Because the cigars would have clearly become disengaged from Mr. Brown when Mr. Brown allegedly punched Officer Wilson through the window of the squad car, right?
Yeah.
Okay? You've got the information sitting right there in front of you at your computer, right?
Yeah.
So the cigars should have fell, some maybe fell inside the car, maybe the others fell by the door. Okay. In fact, I bet you that when Officer Wilson stepped out of the patrol car to pursue the suspect, if you will, Mr. Brown, he probably stepped on some of those cigars, right? Now, here's another thing that's not being talked about. Beg pardon?
When he stepped in the car and he fell out, they probably thought he was doing something in there, you know, in his car, rolling some cigarettes.
Well, but see, the cigars have to be accounted for now, okay? So when the CSI team showed up, that was the crime scene investigators, CSI, they should have secured those cigars. You don't think that they didn't realize that the cigars were really not relevant to what the story was going to be? Right?
Right.
Think about it, Mr. Allen. Think about it, callers. Think about it, listeners of this program. So you don't think that they fooled around and didn't pick them cigars up, do you?
No, I don't think it would happen like that.
Yeah, because the reason we're saying that on CNN right now is Mark O'Mara, the infamous attorney for the murderer Zimmerman, trying to defend the police officer's position. That's the reason we've cut in with this narrative, because even Mark O'Mara and the slick, smooth white boys and girls haven't picked up on the fact that you've got to have those cigars, because those cigars, as they like to say in their Latin term, are the prima facie of this entire scenario. Because that's what you're going to have to come up with in order to get the feds away from talking about deadly force, excessive force, and et cetera, Mr. Allen, correct?
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's the gateway.
You're breaking up just a bit, Mr. Allen.
Okay.
So my question is, where are the cigars? The cigars are so fundamental to the term prima facie on one hand, probable cause on the other. The probable cause being the reason that the officer would have exited his car with his weapon drawn, though he said in the second and first statements that he gave that some way or another Mr. Brown, as he punched him, also reached to get his weapon. And then in the course of the struggle, Officer Wilson says at one point Mr. Brown actually was controlling his automatic gun, but that he was able to fight this 6'4", 290-pound African-American young man, and he regained his gun. And that's when then Mr. Brown started running. See, we're going to go into the sequential scenario, okay?
Okay.
But my question is, where are the cigars?
Oh,
by the way, also,
about.
Mr. Allen, you and I talked about this at a production meeting. Maybe someone can call and explain to us why there were only 3 shell casings found in the street.
Uh-oh.
Why were there not 6 shell casings? There were only 3 shell casings. Now, we know that they will come up with 3 additional, 4 additional. Oh, by the way, they took 2 bullets out of one of the apartment houses that were behind them. Two. They took 2 spent bullets out of the wall. So that would mean at least 8 shots, right, Mr. Allen?
Yes. Absolutely.
And I would assume that the officer was firing either a Glock or a Taurus or a Setra with a magazine capacity of 15 and one in the chamber, 14, one in the chamber, for a total of anywhere from 15 to 16. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy because from what the cops are saying, Mr. Edwards, it's saying the cops are trying to claim that Mike Brown covered 2/3 of a mile in the 4 minutes from 11:50 to 11:59, from the time he left the store to that place where he was murdered, which is absolutely ridiculous. I'm just looking at I'm looking at a map, actually, and that's utterly impossible.
Yes, you've just shouted over here to me, and actually I had suggested to my colleague, Mr. Allen, particularly when we were looking at the home and the address of Officer Wilson there in Crestwood, Missouri, in South St. Louis County. We were wondering. By the way, the caller from Missouri made an interesting statement. We don't want to ignore the price of the house that both Officer Wilson's mama is staying in and the price of the house that Officer Wilson was staying in.
Huh.
And we looked at pictures of that. We know some of those pictures have been posted. That is about in the St. Louis market, suburban market, that's a house about $215,000, $220,000. That's a lot for an officer only making $36,000 a year, if he was making that much, because he's only been with the department 6 years. So that's he got a pretty nice deal on that nice bungalow there in Crestwood, Missouri.
Yes, he did get a good deal on that. I'm just saying, beautiful home. So.
Yes, it is. throw that phone number out there again, because I'm wanting to hear from some of our civil rights activists. Let's get the caller.
Our local civil rights activists, they're not going to call. Okay, caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead,
Brother James. How you been and doing?
Hey,
yeah, Brother James, how you doing, man? This is Donnie and Ronnie. What's happening, man? Welcome to Ferguson, Missouri. But go ahead, my brother. What's your question? What's your observation?
I got a serious question to ask you, Mr. Edwards. How does a gentleman such as Mr. Wilson get on the police department with a nefarious upbringing? If his mother got that kind of background, can he become a police officer?
Oh, yeah. You can't hold the sin of the parents against the future of the child. I mean, that's really works in white Christian America. I'm not sure how it plays out with, you know, people of color.
Yeah, I'm
no, they
you
couldn't.
That too.
They couldn't hold that against it.
Like that too?
Beg pardon?
Can minorities get on the police department with parents with nefarious backgrounds? Can they become police officers?
Not really. In the course of a background check, that's how a lot of the blacks were eliminated in the CSO program here in Minneapolis. We call attention to the front page story in yesterday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, indicating that there basically will continue to be a serious reduction of African-American police officers in the Minneapolis and fire department and police department. To your specific question, Brother James, excellent question, because what we do when we're doing the background checks for people of color, we do take a pretty close look at lineage, if you will. And if mommy and daddy, you know, we will weigh that against you, okay?
Yeah,
now,
if I'm not mistaken, the minority officers have to take some type of psychological test, too. Am I correct?
Well, everybody has to take psychological tests, but let me, I'm so glad you're raising these questions. I was reviewing my testimony. I hate to say it, but it's a fact. I was reviewing my testimony a couple of years ago in a lawsuit brought by and I hope that he and his buddies, he's got friends there in Springfield, Illinois, Mr. Allen. I had to give a deposition as a federal monitor for the Department of Justice in a situation in which Dr. Campion had been brought in to eliminate as many African-Americans and others of color. Of course, what happened at that particular time, we were sitting as a special oversight committee for the Department of Justice, and so I was able to file a formal complaint with the Department of Justice. But what happened was Dr. Campion filed a lawsuit against the city, and this is for the council members and et cetera that also listen in, Mr. Allen. And Dr. Campion talked in terms of a relationship between he and Chief Tim Dolan to eliminate as many African Americans as possible doing the psychological test. Brother James, you are just godsend.
Okay,
I got another one for you.
I got another one for you. This is the $1 million question in the Manila fold right here. Now, from the way this Officer Wilson singled out this brother, it seems like he's got some kind of secret relationship with that store.
With the who?
With the store, you know, with the franchise.
Is
he like the hired muscle that, you know, when somebody come in there and take something or grab something, and does he go and they call this particular officer, and he by him working in that predominantly African-American neighborhood, is he the henchman that goes and get these guys to do
And it's one of the things that I know that Attorney General Holder and those over 40 FBI agents that he's got there in Ferguson, they're taking a look at really what is the history, because, see, there was a reason, Mr. Allen, we got to do it again. See, there's a question about why Officer Wilson left the Jennings, Missouri Police Department to come to work over in Ferguson, because he had some situations. See, Jennings is another one of those little towns just up the road.
He got some rogue background. He's a rogue cop on the run.
By the way, let me do this on this. This is from the archives of the United States District Court for the District of Minnesota here in our beloved Minnesota. The deposition by yours truly, gentlemen, for all them naysayers, was given on Tuesday, November 4th in the year of our Lord 2008 by yours truly. It's about a 400-page document, but it is Barlow Campion, that's Campion and Associates of Illinois Incorporated, an Illinois corporation, and Michael A. Campion, he's the plaintiff, against the city of Minneapolis and Mayor, and Mayor R.T. Ryback in his individual capacity and official role. And it is an interesting document. It is a sealed portion. It was sealed. It was ordered sealed by the federal court. Of course, they had to give me a copy because I gave deposition and talked in terms of information that was provided to me in my role as the co-chair of the powerful PCRC. That's why we didn't get an extension, Mr. Allen, because we caused all these problems.
Mr. Allen, can I ask you another question?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask you another question? Now, when they was doing the rampart in California, in L.A., didn't they find out that the brother that was linked to the Tupac killing, didn't they find out under the investigation that he not only had one house, he had two houses, a nice bankroll, and some expensive cars for somebody that only been on the police department for 4 or 5 years?
They definitely did. They definitely did. Like I said, that's the reason
you
that you want to take a look.
Just explain right there that this Officer Wilson has not been on the police department long enough to have that kind of a home owner.
Well, I'm just telling you, he's been a member of the Ferguson, a sworn member, licensed in the state of Missouri. I'm going to put on my Confederate voice. In the state of Missouri, he has been a member of the Ferguson Police Department for 4 years, and has a reputation as, quote-unquote, an assassin. Prior to that, he was on the Jennings, Missouri Police Department for 2 years. during which time there was some controversy, but he was brought over by Chief Tommy Jackson because he was the kind of guy, quote unquote, that we would like to have in our department dealing with, get this now, gentlemen, the changing demographics of Ferguson, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. That means that he's one of them good old boys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah.
Officer Wilson. Old boys, yes, you don't do the right thing. Now, Mr. Edwards, I got another bomb to drop on you. Whatever happened to the owner, to the store owner that was killing minorities in Detroit? Nobody never even brought that back up.
He was allowed to move out of Detroit. He is relocated to the Northwest. He's out there in Washington State. Oops.
What happened to all the dead bodies, the people that he killed? I mean, there's no court, no justice. The grand jury is still out. They're out to lunch. I mean, what's happening here?
Couldn't return no bill. You know, it happens. That's what's getting ready to happen in St. Louis County. The grand jury will return no bill.
Believe me, you buddy, there's an open season on you coloreds then, that means. Isn't that what you're trying to tell me?
I just said to my associate, Mr. Allen, about 50 minutes ago, that we are being used in America as target practice. We're used as target practice. See, nobody's paying any attention that just in the last month and a half, there's been at least 6 young African-Americans in high-profile situations that have been gunned down by the police. And really, if you really talk to people in St. Louis who are activists like we are up here, they will tell you there are all kinds of mysterious deaths of young African-Americans found all over St. Louis and St. Louis County. But like I said, Brother James, always headshots. Always headshots, execution style. Okay? Now, you think about how many times that white policeman shot that young 18-year-old African-American. Now, contrary to what my girlfriend from North Carolina said, I don't think that piece about a bum rush, I don't think that's going to work. And let me say this. Anyone that knows pathology and physics and et cetera knows that when I put one in the top of your head, you are dead.
That means that he spent a whole lot of target practice at the target range, and he's attacked.
Let me tell you, old Officer Wilson, only 28 years old, but that boy knew what to do to make sure you were taken out, okay?
Well, go back to the old George Benny. Can he carry a gun good as fun? Not only can he carry it, but he can use it, too.
That's right. Okay, Brother James, we appreciate it.
Yeah,
by the way, that psychological lawsuit, Dr. Campion, Michael Campion out of Ollie, Illinois, one of the top psychological firms in the country, used to get rid of negros, if you will. Trying to get into law enforcement, if you will. I gave you the date, November 4th, 2008. It has been sealed by order of the court, but then they had to give me a copy.
What is this Mr. Champion's nationality, if I may ask?
He is a Caucasian. He's a
cotton pick, and I'll be doggone.
Yeah, well, that, you know, Barlow, Campion and Barlow, man, they some of the best.
You all got a black president, but boy, I tell you, we still got our Klansmen in the police department, and everywhere you can pull around the corner, we going to be white. Listen, we don't have the South no more and use trees no more. We going to use these legalized guns that we got with our boys and badges.
That's right. That's what they're doing. All right, Brother James, we're getting ready to break it off. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, Mr. Allen. Now, old brother James asked a couple questions. I had to lay it out there because boy, they don't talk about that lawsuit, Michael Campion Barlow and Associates of Illinois against the city of Minneapolis, the chief and the mayor. See, that was an ugly one, and that's the reason the city asked that everything be sealed, including the depositions. I welcome anybody if they can get their hands on it. To review my deposition, okay?
And we have a call. Yeah. We have a caller.
Let's get the caller, man. We got about 4 minutes. Go ahead, call.
Yeah. Yes, sir, you're live on the air. Hello, caller, you're live on the air. Okay, I guess he just wants to be in the queue. He just wants to be in the queue.
Sorry about
that.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show talking about Ferguson, Missouri, and the murder of Michael Brown.
Okay, and we got about 6 minutes left. Grand jury has been convened. Caller from Missouri, as well as Mr. Allen, checking this morning's edition, or tomorrow morning's edition, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The grand jury comprised of 12 citizens of the state of Missouri, including 3 African-Americans.
I just have a comment to make in terms of what's going on in St. Louis.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on. I can hear you.
Okay, I just have a comment to make about that. This has been going on, the assault on the male since Emmett Till. And they got a saying that black folks deal with a lot. It's called picnic. And does anybody really know what that means, what a picnic is?
A picnic used to mean a lynching party.
Yeah, pick a nigger. That's the true meaning of that. And so they're just doing it in another way. You know what I'm saying? And my son is locked up, but right now I'm kind of glad that he's locked up, because he would probably be the one of those brothers that they would just take out. And they're doing this to our kids. And even the people that they brought in, it's either way we turn, we screwed here. You know, they paid for agitators to come in that wasn't really about that cause and whatnot. And it's really ridiculous. And we just keep going for the same old thing. And so far as leaders here in Minnesota, stuff happens and the same thing just goes on and on and on and on. And it's ridiculous. And what I really called in about was that lady from North Carolina that made that statement, you know. White folks act like it's white privilege to do whatever they want to do to us, and then they protect each other, you know, and that's the real deal here. She don't have a clue to what's going on, okay?
Absolutely.
She didn't have any
facts.
Thank
you for that, caller, and we appreciate you reminding all of us with 2 minutes left that what this is starting to turn into, though there are many Caucasians who have supported and marched with African Americans in Ferguson. But what we're beginning to see is the true picture, the ugly picture of a sense of white privilege. And that now extends to the fact that African-Americans are quote-unquote free game, if you will, like you're at a hunting preserve, to be gunned down in the street under any and all circumstances. And by the way, for those that talk about Chicago and et cetera, as we repeat what we said earlier, gentlemen, too many cold cases not being solved in Chicago, which is interesting, just like you don't solve them here in Minneapolis. And nobody wants to answer the question, where are the guns coming from? We don't own any manufacturing plants. We don't manufacture any guns. You know what I'm saying? So where are the guns coming from? Okay, Billy Bob can tell you, though. All right, gentlemen.
All right.
Well, Mr. Allen, you know, we got to wrap it, baby.
Yeah.
I guess we got Brother James Brown to
yeah.
take us on home, I guess.
Yeah.
We as older Americans just happy and blessed that we've lived to see another sunset.
We made it this far.
I don't know what the rest of the week will bring, but we've lived to see another sunset. That's the way it is now in America, the beautiful.